morning, Anne. How are you?
Good morning. It's nice to see you and talk to you.
I know. You're like, you got an intergalactic background on your Zoom, it seems like.
Yes, I call it orbital distancing with my virtual background. Yeah. It's one of the standard ones, but I love the creativity of people in these days.
All right, before we go and talk about serious stuff, did you really do the 6-minute plank on the Village Global Zoom call?
I did. We have a very good team, and it was a very competitive thing. And it was a lot of fun. And I give our team members, Sheila and Sam, a great shout out for, you know, making it fun as we're trying to stay super connected.
You know, that is why they call VCs crazy. You guys are, you just proved the cliche right there. I mean, if you ask me to do that, I'm sorry, I cannot do it. It'll be just too much for me. I cannot do plank for like 6 seconds, forget about 6 minutes.
But you're a VC, so, you know, VCs are everything. No.
It's like, you know, I'm in transition VC, right? You're like, you have proved you are 100% VC now with that move right there.
I don't know. Well, we're taking suggestions for what the friendly competition should be next week. So if anyone has suggestions, let us know.
I think this should be like a rice eating competition.
I was thinking cooking contest, but it's so hard to judge, you know?
Yeah, same difference. So anyway, how are you keeping yourself busy these days?
So I think like everyone, I do feel a bit helpless. I think, well, first, I think we are busy just trying to stay connected with lots of people, both socially and professionally. And I think when my mind goes to checking Twitter again or something, I just try to do something for somebody else, whether that's a phone call or a donation or a email of encouragement, which I think is really important in these days. And then when I have to do something, a technique I've always kind of used is do it with the intention for someone else. And that can be somebody that you know, like, oh, I'm going to do this for someone who inspired me, a great teacher, a parent or something like that, or for someone I don't know, which is, I'm grateful to have a job or something like that. And this is done for people who don't at this point. And then otherwise, I'm a super creature of habit. So I wake up, I meditate with the Calm app, and Calm has tons of free resources right now, both for sleep stories and for stretching and meditation. I like to say I do meditation. I just lie in bed the 10 minutes. And then the 7-minute workout I do religiously, which is also free. And it's just a way to get kind of get going in the morning. Drink a glass of water, do a to-do list, run every day, and try to stop checking too much social media, which is hard, really hard now. How about you?
Before I tell you what I do, tell me more about your avoiding Twitter. Like, why are you doing it, and how are you doing it? Like, I know you said I do something for others. What does that really mean?
Yeah, well, so it could be calling somebody by phone. And I think we are rediscovering the power of the call, even the unannounced, unscheduled call, which is great. So maybe that's checking in with a relative. Maybe that's checking in with a founder. Maybe it is, a donation, something like that. I think lots of school kids, for example, missing public school means missing meals and support structure and all that kind of stuff. So that's super important in these days. And and I think that the key with Twitter or social media is just I'm trying to ration myself to checking just a couple times a day. And it's hard, I think, for all of us to do that. But it just seems necessary and more productive.
Well, that's really hard when you have friends like me and Chris Michael who are constantly sending you links from Twitter. So
it is true. And yeah, there's a lot of good content out there. And, you know, I think that that is maybe a silver lining in terms of potentially humanity more together in the cloud. And so it does seem like the physical distancing and borders and access control to, you know, physical locations and stuff, it's probably going to persist for a long time. And the hope is that the cloud, right, can keep us not just socially connected, but hopefully the rate of knowledge sharing and knowledge building can actually be increasing. And I remember in I was in China probably 5 years ago or so now, and they called somebody I met said, we're seeing, because of the internet, knowledge explosion, which is physicians all over China, really for the first time, were accessing real-time information and back best practices. Now, admittedly, there's bad information, there's, you know, but that enables humanity, for example, to build on knowledge faster. And so that is one benefit. And I'm hopeful that, you know, like all technology, there can be good consequences and bad consequences, because technology is just the tool. But I'm hopeful that that we can still be more proximate with the kind of communication technologies we have, even if physical distancing remains in place.
So you're on the in the hopeful camp that we will become better people because of the pandemic.
Well, yes, I am. I think I'm definitely an optimist. And there, the silver lining of a common enemy to humanity, I hope, is humanity aligns. And against this, and you know, it's like they used to have the sci-fi movies or the alien movies where humanity comes together there. Now we don't have a threat from outer space, but basically from, I don't know, the tiniest particles or in the world.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, because I'm in the camp of people who's like, yeah, we are going through this right now, but you know, give it a few weeks when things are a little bit normal, we're just going to go back to who we really are. So I kind of worry about our inability to change as people.
Well, and I think there is a dark lining to this, which is, what if states get more totalitarian and there's more fear mongering and there's actually more blame and more divisiveness? And somebody made a parallel, I think, to 1937, like around 1937, which was the economic duress of the Depression, arguably impacted the political situation and led directly or indirectly to World War II. And that's definitely a possibility, but I hope we can transcend that.
I hope so, indeed. And so, you know, you've been through on a professional level, you've been through two or three down cycles, right, so far. This may be your third down cycle. You've been through the 2000 dot-com burst and then the 2008 downturn. What's your take on the market right now? How do you see, now you're on the other side. Now you're not on the operational side. What is it that you see in the market, which is it the same? Is it different? Like, how do you read it?
Yeah, and I'll caveat that I'm not an epidemiologist or an economist.
I'm talking purely from our ecosystem.
Okay, got it.
Startup and tech ecosystem standpoint.
Yep. So we are still writing checks. We are trying to stay close to the portfolio in terms of making sure that everyone is aware cash is oxygen, and you have to have your fingers on the dials of your business. And there is not necessarily a premium on growth. There is a premium on discipline, if not cash flow positive or profitable, which is very hard at our stages, which is super early stage ventures. I think that great companies are founded at all times, right? Meaning I don't think many entrepreneurs don't time the market, right? They come up with a solution. It might be context dependent, but they're going to launch that. Not to say there aren't businesses that seem especially poignant or people have an epiphany right now, given the changes that are happening right now. But I think it's just a different level of discipline for founders and a different level of discipline for investors. And probably the bar is higher for both, meaning we won't have tourist founders and we won't have tourist investors. We'll have people who are doing this because, frankly, they can't do anything else. They love starting things and they love backing the founders that are out to create something big.
Mm. I mean, in your mind, are we in 2008 or 2000 kind of a thinking? Like, is like from a downturn standpoint, will it last longer or is it like going to take a little bit, you know, it'll end soon in your mind, like the downturn in our ecosystem? I know a larger macroeconomic, you know, situation is like none of us really know. And right. even the very best of them don't know. So, but I'm just saying, as people who are involved in tech and tech companies and all that kind of stuff.
So personally, I would hope for the best, plan for the worst. So what does that mean for a startup? It means assume that revenue almost dries up. If you're very small and even if you have Fortune 500 companies or something like that, I think that is prudent. And there's lots of measures. There are painful measures to take years ago. But and this is a different, I mean, it's a different animal. It's not a financial structuring problem, right? This is a threat and to health and way of life that has economic impact. So I don't think we've actually dealt with this before. And I think given the uncertainty about it, the prudence is, as I said, just plan for the worst.
Right. Now, you were there during the dot-com bust. You were in the operational role at that time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so what were you doing then? And what were this thing you did to kind of, I mean, that was a brutal downturn.
Right. So I was with our mutual fund, Chris Michael, at military.com. And the best advice that sticks with me now is actually something that he shared that came from pilot training, or as he was an aviator. And that is when you have an aircraft mishap, and that could be because of, incoming weapon, I guess, or attack or a mechanical malfunction. Pilots or aviators are trained to do three things: aviate, navigate, and communicate. And I think in part of training, pilots actually sometimes listen to the mishap reports of people communicating on the radio as they plummet, and sometimes plummet to their death. And the reminder there is that while communication in a crisis is critical, the quality of the communication matters. And for leaders, while you don't want to delay it, you do want to be thoughtful about what and how you're communicate. And that's the aviate and navigate. So keep the plane flying, navigate, then communicate. And so navigation is about what is the context. And I think the best entrepreneurs realize when the rules of the game have changed. So maybe 6 months ago, the premium was on growth and some hope of, you know, LTV over time, and now the premium is on absolutely understanding ROI of every dollar you are spending and being focused on the things that really matter. And in military.com, I remember very vividly having company meetings where we showed a graph that was down and to the right. And we actually had a flame out date, which was what, you know, that was the term du jour for when we would be out of cash. And we shared that with the team. And in addition, in that crisis, very quickly after 9/11 happened, which meant not only did we have that you know, the economic issues of the dot-com implosion, but we had service members being, or team members being deployed, and in some cases volunteering because they were very passionate about the, you know, issues. And so, and we worried for them and their safety and all that kind of stuff. But in that context, we created an orderly shutdown plan, which had some severance and some things like that. And it was a very detailed plan. And we got back to work. Then, and I won't sugarcoat it, we went from like 80 employees to 15. We had to reduce staff. And it was awful. And we had receivables not coming in because some of our customers, you know, businesses would say, oh, you're one of those dot-coms, you'll probably go out of business. So it was like the plans that we had made were even whacked by other external variables. So, but we put that order, we put the orderly shutdown plan in the drawer. Then, as I said, we got back to work and we committed to making this work. And I've seen over the years that how you manage impacts the outcome in a big way. And once you've committed to a plan, you figure it out. Now, at certain points, you have to say, are we hitting our milestones or not? And do we reevaluate the plan, which is a healthy and necessary part of this process? But then leadership comes in. And I think the big things for leadership are clarity and alignment. And in times of uncertainty, the plan becomes more important, even if that plan is hour to hour or day to day. And you focus on the things you can control and the checkpoints that you're going to try to mix. And even in talking to founders today, we can't control when revenue is going to get collected. We can't control whether sales are going to happen. We can control potentially whether a product feature is going to push. We can control how we're going to communicate with each other. We can control the things we're going to do and not do, and, you know, like things we're going to stop, because we need to stay focused. And the context setting of that clarity and alignment is just really important. And I think that there's a lot, if you can create that purpose, that affinity for the goals you're coming up with, then I think it's amazing how people will pull together. And I think a lot of people will actually find clarity and some joy in their work in a time when, you know, personally, it's really uncertain and scary and all that kind of stuff. So that might be a thing that leaders can think about, is how do they make sure people are putting their family and their own wellness first, but then to the extent they can, be involved in projects that are meaningful to them.
Can you elaborate on that? Because I think a lot of us, you know, I mean, I was a reporter back in 2000 and 2001 timeframe, so I didn't really have to do any shutdown or change plans. I was part of Red Herring, which, I mean, if you remember Red Herring at one time,
yeah,
it was thicker than, you know, the Brides magazine. It was so flush with ads. And I think it had the dubious distinction of putting out the thickest magazine ever, bigger than Vogue or anything. And that was like few months after that, like, you know, the bottom fell out of the tech ecosystem. And all I remember is that basically people from my company being laid off, people being cut. And like, I'm always worried about like, when is the hammer gonna, or, you know, the axe gonna fall on me, not the hammer. And in reality, like when I think back to it, the one thing which really got me through it was a lot of smoking. I used to be a smoker at that time, a lot of coffee and a lot of work, actually, just I kept focused on work. So I was on the employee side of things, and I didn't really experience what my owners and CEO and the editors had to go through. So, but you were in the management of military.com. And so, like, what was it that you, like, you know, how are you planning? Like, okay, this is how we need to plan for, like, shutdown, for cutting costs. And, like, how did you think about that? Because I bet you there's a lot of startups out there who haven't even thought about it. Like, how do you even do this? Like, How do you even have an intelligent framework to kind of reduce cost, you know? And if you have to cut people, how do you cut people? Where do you cut people from? I mean, like, there is no template for this, right? There is no playbook.
Nope. But
what was your way of doing it?
So, and this is, I think, what we've discussed with a bunch of startups as well today. So same rule applies. And unfortunately, I went through this in 2008 as well, because I joined a great team in Utah called Zinch. And we had planned to raise money. And of course, in 2008, that was much harder than we anticipated. So I think the first thing is to do a zero base. What are we trying to accomplish? And what are the most important things we need to do to accomplish that? And while the best way to buy yourself some time is to do the thinking about what is core and really how much cash you have, and I think cash is the simplifying principle. Cash is oxygen to a company. And then you kind of build up from there. And I think in these times, in for many cases, you have to assume that the revenue and the receipts are going to be either zero or depressed, right? So that's a zero base kind of a thing. And then you figure, what is my runway? And then I think costs are generally more controllable than revenue or fundraising, but you should think about all of those three levers. I commend a bunch of founders we work with that, like 3 weeks ago, they kind of saw that there might be disruption on the horizon, and they closed immediate bridge round, maybe an uncapped note with a discount to the next round or something like that, and circle wagons and put in their buffers. Many people are saying have 2 years of runway if you can do it. And that can come in a variety of ways. It could be salary cuts across the board. It could be, unfortunately, letting people go, or furlough, which is, you know, temporary. Maybe they can keep healthcare, which is super important in these times, or and really thinking about all non-essential expenses, of course, talking to suppliers or vendors. And I think the responsible thing is not to just stop paying, but to communicate, because that's the way we keep our humanity as business people, is let's work through this. There are some plans from the government. I can send you some links or something like that, but the SBA loans we think can help many small businesses, and understanding those is right. The other thing practically, I think there's a thought exercise which costs us nothing, which is to think about, if there are elements of new normal, whether that's short-term disruption or maybe longer-term impact to businesses, does that actually change the nature of the business? And whether that's a full pivot or a change in adaptation, it's important. So, long-winded way, but...
Oh, but like, it got you through, and, you know, military.com had a really nice outcome, and, you know, your other, experiences have only contributed to your ability to guide, companies at Village Global through this this tough time. I mean, so in a way, they are very fortunate to have you. I think there is nothing like experience. When I see, John Callahan and talk about the past with our portfolio companies, you know, he's been through it as a founder, as a VC, and, you know, we've been through it. I went through 2008 as a founder, and it was pretty drastic. You know, luckily for us, we actually closed a round of funding 2 days before, the Sequoia infamous rest in peace memo came out. Ironically, I was the one who broke the story on that memo.
So wow, I just, that's
like,
amazing.
It's like, ooh, this is kind of dicey, but anyway.
But I lived this. I had a term sheet pulled in 2008. So I had a signed term sheet evaporate, and that was hard. And, I think, yeah, is it's so we're going to have to, navigate through this. And my perspective on experiences has changed a lot, because I used to be like, well, I've been through it, so I can give some advice. But here's the two kinds of things that I think experience helps with: confidence and courage. And confidence to me doesn't come from having all the answers, because this is a different challenge, and this is different for everybody that goes through it. But to me, confidence is trust in yourself, that you have the ability to work through what arises, and that you're going to embrace the joy of figuring it out. And then the second thing is courage, which is, I used to be much more worried about making a decision and then having it be wrong, and then having to deal with that guilt and shame of like a wrong decision, especially as a leader. But now I realize it's not about the leader. It's not about you, or it's not about me as the leader. It's about the team and the objective and the mission. And you make the best decisions you can at every time. Not making a decision is a decision. So often delaying doesn't help. And it's okay for leaders I think it's essential that leaders, especially at these times, to not think about you. And I love the quote, great leaders don't think less of themselves. They just think of themselves less. And that gives us the ability to move forward and to take bold action when it's needed.
Your way of thinking is the exact opposite of VC Twitter, where everybody has answers for everything. Right.
Well,
I think, the idea of like actually saying, I don't know, is become such a no-no in modern society, that we actually probably do more harm by, giving advice and just saying, I don't know. I mean, it's like, like such a strange time. I think the only thing, most people can do with confidence, in my mind, is, provide a helping hand, be empathetic to their employees. And, the thing is, I mean, just the idea of having to do your job with kids running around in your house is just like that, no matter how big your house is, but that alone is a difficult situation for the employees. And I think, from my standpoint, great founders are empathetic to that reality.
Yes. And this is a humanitarian crisis, right? Like, this is not just an economic crisis. And I think that is the right approach. And health and wellness is is paramount. People have to take care of themselves and their families and, first. Yeah, no question.
It's another thing which has become really popular in modern society, especially in our tech ecosystem, is that, in this kind of an environment, if as a team member you think of yourself and your family, you're thought of as a lesser player in your company. And I think that is it plays out, time and time again in many startups. And I think
I'm going to counter in a friendly way. In 2001, I never heard, what are you doing for self-care? Just did not exist. And now I hear that a lot. And I'm actually favorably predisposed that I think great folks are embracing, hey, bring your children on the Zoom call and bring your pets on. And if your child comes into the meeting, let's just all have fun with that. And I hope people realize that. And I see signs of that, flickers all over the place. And I think the days of bragging about how little sleep people got, or, how hard they're working, I hope that is not, there's no glory in that anymore. It's about effectiveness, not, hours cranked away and stuff like that. So anyway, I see positive signs of that.
Well, I hope so. It would be the right thing to do, especially in this day and age. I mean, we are going through, we are handling so much more issues right now. So I feel that it would be great to actually be more flexible. That's what I meant is like, but, the, you know, we also have a big culture, which is like, hey, you know, you got to show up. And, you know, I hope it's not, you know, and I think we learn from it, and it becomes self-care, becomes part of, you know, tech ecosystem going forward. I think that would be a really good thing for us to experience.
For sure.
So, what are you doing for fun? You know, reading books, watching movies,
yes,
TV. What books have you read?
Well, so I just discovered one yesterday by a guy named Ross Gay, The Book of Delights, with his essays. And he's really poetic in his writing. And, you know, he delights in his garden and things like that. And I just thought it was especially poignant. He's also has some really eloquent phrases like justice is the public expression of love, which is just an interesting idea. So I think it's really good to get outside of the business books and into some of the classics and things like that. I love audiobooks in when I run, and I'm delighted with the podcast. And, you know, I'm excited to be on Stuck at Ohm, and I would listen to Ohm Alone. I would, you know, any other podcast you or others do.
Okay. And any TV shows you recommend for others?
So I'm very bad at TV, and I don't even subscribe to Netflix, which is so weird. But I'm trying to read more and listen to more books, audiobooks than TV.
Well, on that note, I mean, I got nothing else to ask you.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. And
again, yeah,
you are a steady force in a chaotic world.
You're so nice to say that. But I really appreciate you making time on a Sunday morning. It's not like you're going anywhere, but still,
right.
You made time. And I will see you at our weekly tiki bar, wine, Italian wine bar kind of thing on the Zoom in a couple of days.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.